You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 1st, 2015. And look out, Pokey, we're coming for you.
Oh, man, gonna get you. Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alvord.
My name's Scott Juster.
And we have come a long way, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
It has been, this is our, what, like three months ago, I think we might have started these Earthbound debriefs.
I checked the Wii U, and it's at least 30-some-odd hours ago.
Okay, there we go. Today, we are doing our final Earthbound debrief.
Yep.
We have finished the game. We have completely beaten all there is to beat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to talk about it. So thanks again for everybody who's playing along with us.
Yep.
If you missed an episode, you could go experiencepoints.net. There's plenty of those back episodes of all of our debriefs about the game. And when last we left, our brave team of friends, Ness, Pokey, Paula, and Jeff, we were in fire.
Not Pokey, though.
Not Pokey. Pooh. Sorry, Pooh. You're right.
Yeah, come on.
Sorry. Pooh. Oh, man. Pooh must be so offended right now. We were in Fire Spring,
yeah,
which was like a cave in the Land Before Time era.
Yeah, and I remember our last, episode was me realizing that I had accidentally skipped some of the sanctuary locations.
Oh, that's right.
At least one of them. Yeah. I think maybe one or two. I forget which ones I skipped or whatever.
So you went and found those locations?
Yes. I had to go back to Dalam. Because I had never done the, like, bunny statue thing.
Okay, yeah.
Which, like, itself was hilarious because the enemies are incredibly easy.
Yeah.
Because I had, like, way leveled past them. So I was just, like, walking through this dungeon in, like, 2 minutes and
Dude,
then got to the
thing. Nice. Yeah, so I did the same thing, but it was, like, a rat dungeon or something.
Oh,
was,
yeah, I remember that one. All right, how do we want to structure this? It's going to be very story heavy because, I mean, we're at the end.
Yeah. I think that what we should do is let's go through beat by beat.
Okay.
And then we'll talk generally about all of Earthbound.
Okay.
And I think why it's probably so important to a lot of people as a game.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just say it right here. There's going to be spoilers. We're going to go through and we're going to talk about the rest of the game here.
That's right.
Starting after the Fire Springs. So if you had been paying attention, you would have been... like rocketed into the next phase of the game. If you were like me and hadn't been paying attention, you'd have to like walk around to other parts of the world and figure out those dungeons, which I actually thought like in retrospect was really cool. Like I didn't even really realize that could happen in Earthbound.
Me neither. Yeah. Cause you associate that with open world games.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I missed a part because I didn't have to do that particular thing.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised as well. Thankfully, there's a huge stone rock guy that's like, here's a list of all of the ones that you have and the ones that you're missing.
Yeah. I remember because I had to do the Dalam one, and I remember the once you get the melody in that, you always have a vision or whatever, and you see things like...
Usually it's just like a statement, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Ness thinks about whatever.
Mm-hmm. And this one was like, Ness had a short vision of seeing his mother when she was young, and like other ones have been like, Ness thinks he sees himself as a child or something like that, like, you know, and that all starts to make sense once you actually get all of the sanctuary melodies, because you get dropped into this monochromatic world where you start walking around.
So this is basically where all of those visions came from, right? Like this one experience.
Yeah.
This is one of the weirder moments in the game, for sure.
In a game of weird moments.
in a game of weird moments. There's a moment too, in my notes where I wrote, I think he sees a vision of his dad holding him as a baby.
Yeah.
And in a game where you never see the dad, and we'll talk about the dad again later on, because I think that's still probably the most interesting thing about this game.
Yep.
It was kind of weirdly touching and sad. Like I thought the whole experience was actually really melancholy.
Yeah.
You know, it's in a gray, black and white. It doesn't feel like... This isn't like Ness looking back on his life and going, oh man, remember that time? That was awesome or whatever. It's more of like, oh, this explains things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he, I was thinking of it like your theory of like Ness as a ghost, basically. Like
he's been dead the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. He's just been walking around and like it's clearly,
or he's imagining all of this stuff.
It's yeah. something like that, because even like when you're walking around in this vision, mm-hmm. the idea of the sanctuary ties to this vision, because it's just there by itself. Like the house is like, where is this? Like, is it kind of outside Onet? Maybe, but it's kind of floating in this like
ether.
Yeah. Where it's like, this is like the last safe place basically that you can think of, or maybe that you never knew, but it's just this thing that is in isolation. And also like the family unit itself is in isolation. This is the only time when the entire family is together in the entire game.
Yep.
And so it's like you have this weird, like, you've been searching for these sanctuary locations throughout the entire game, and what you actually find when you put them all together is this, like, long-lost sanctuary.
Yeah, and that's like, gone, and you're never going to get back. Exactly, like, it's this weird...
Yeah.
It's almost like the peak of Ness growing up,
yep.
right? Which is, if we're looking at this as like, a coming-of-age story, because that's when he realizes, oh, this is the sort of memory that makes me happy, or this is the thing that I want to reflect on, but this isn't the reality of the time.
Yep. I thought the actual like storytelling and the text in that flashback was really good. Like you don't even see the mom and dad. You just see a cradle that's like gently rocking or whatever, but you hear the dad saying, oh, you know, he smiled just hearing his own name. And then they start talking about, you know, the wife says, oh, he's going to grow up to be a hard worker just like you. And it's like, yeah, that's the last time you ever see your dad, basically.
Oh, my God. That's depressing.
And then Ness goes out and doesn't see his mom for who knows how long or whatever, because he's just out there grinding, you know?
I mean, maybe the hope, though, is, like, this is a different type of work.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll get to it when we get to the end of the episode, but at the end of the entire game, like, he goes home again.
Yep.
Right? It's not like he stays out late in a way. So, I don't know. I feel like maybe there's some redemption to be found here. I'm really glad that this goes almost immediately into Magicant.
Yeah.
Which is also one of the weirder things in the game, because Magicant is basically...
It's like his internal psychic.
Yeah, but it's like as though... Everything inside of Ness's mind has, like, a alternate reality physicality to it.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, so when you're exploring Magicant, like, not only is it weird because all the colors are bizarre and there's, like, carrots in the ground and stuff, but he meets a younger version of himself.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
And the younger version of himself just wants to have fun. Like, he just wants to go play or something like that, right? And at this point in the game, you found all of the things. You've drank coffee twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know your destiny. I feel like... The peak, right? The climax is palpable. You know that you have this epic fight with Gygas coming up soon.
Yeah.
And the flashback was sort of melancholy. And now I think this continues that melancholy feel of looking at this younger self that is oblivious to the fact that the world is actually kind of scary, that there are things that you don't understand that are actually really very serious, and the adult world is serious, and you have to step up to the plate and do that.
Yeah.
And sort of literally leave your younger self behind.
Yeah. It's also interesting, too, to see, like, just Ness actually have an internal side to him. Because usually in, like, a JRPG, it's like, whatever. It's just a cipher, a blank, you know, slate for you to, you know, they don't even have a voice, let alone internal monologue. But, like, they do. Like, this is kind of what Ness's brain looks like on the inside. And also, it's not that he is mute. It's just that his dialogue, he has an internal monologue.
Yes.
So it's not like he's like a thoughtless shell. It's just he doesn't talk when he's outside of this area.
It's like he doesn't voice it to others.
Yeah.
But he is having those conversations.
Exactly. Like he's like he's a fleshed out character, but it's just not with other people.
My absolute favorite statement from one of the people inside of Magicant says that Magicant itself reflects the evil and violent side of you.
Yeah. That was weird.
I mean, this game is fucking hella dark.
Yeah.
Like, from here on out, it gets really dark. And I think that right there is super bizarre, but, you know, there's this level of, have you ever read His Dark Materials? It's like a children's series, right? Yeah. And that's...
By the way, side note, don't let the movie put you off. You should really read the books not watch the movie.
Easily one of the best young adult fiction by far. Yeah. Awesome work of science fiction.
Yeah.
Small spoil. No, you know what? I won't spoil anything for there. But there comes a point in that book where the two characters have to grow up.
Yeah.
And it's a very obvious moment.
Mm.
And there's a sense of realization that you cannot have that same level of innocence or joviality or whatever, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, like, it's just a transition point.
It's just a transition. Yeah. That's part of what growing up is, right? Like, you have to move on from a world that is just purely fun and games into a world that's actually full of some serious drama and responsibilities. To me, that felt like a taste of this. Like,
yeah.
Oh, inside of everybody, inside of all children, there's going to be an evil and violent side of you, right? Like, throughout this game, we've seen adults who you tame, or animals that you tame, right? Mm-hmm. Who've been corrupted by, like, Gygax's evil influence, yep. Right? And you get the sense that maybe this was always part of them and is part of you. Like, if Ness weren't a kid and wasn't one of the ones who were destined for, you know, defeating Gygax, and maybe this game actually took place 20 years and Ness is 30,
yeah.
He would have fought some kid because he would have been corrupted because there's evils and violent sides of him too.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But I like that it fits into that children's story theme.
It's also creepy that it feels like you're going deeper into it to find those things. Like, you start off with, like, your family and your pets and relatively benign characters, but as you get deeper into it, you have to, like, you meet those strange flying men that act as your courage. Like, oh, I'm Ness's courage. You know, you can take me with you or whatever. But, like, you're just going deeper and deeper into, like, whatever you're going to find down there.
In Magic Game.
Fear or hate or whatever.
Your own psychosis. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was... I had kind of forgotten about this part. Like, in my head, I had just mentally skipped to the last part of the game, but I had forgotten that this happened as, like, a preparation point for the, for the last one.
Right.
Enemies, pretty hard in this one. I remember thinking to myself.
Yep.
I've
spent a lot of this part of the game running away from battles.
Ah, yeah.
Which I think probably hurt me in the long
run. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... That will be interesting once we get to talk about the last battle a little bit, because there's a few curveballs there.
Just a few.
Just a few curveballs here and there. I remember thinking that you fight a boss towards the end, and it's, again, one of those, what are those? It's like the things that were... hypnotizing Monotoli. It's
The statues or whatever. Pua statues or something?
Yeah. But it's called
Mani statue.
It's called Ness's Nightmare.
Yeah.
And you're just, like, fighting it by yourself too.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's one of those weird battles where, like, that's it. Like, you don't have any friends or anything. Like, you're just fighting something.
You are alone.
Yeah.
And you're fighting your nightmares.
Yeah, you're fighting your nightmare. After the battle, though, you know, you overcome your nightmare. After the battle, it's like you unlock something in yourself, you know, like you reach the next level of Saiyan power or some shit or whatever. And,
yeah.
I really liked how this is a subtle thing, but I liked how they represented that by just a huge dump of experience.
Yeah.
Like a
huge amount.
Yeah. I mean, like, you go up multiple levels, you unlock multiple, like, spells or whatever. Yeah. Like,
for a second, I thought I was lagging behind and that was the game's way of equalizing things.
Well, I mean, I think it is in a way where it's like, if you have gotten to the point where you're underleveled and you make it through here, it's like, okay, we need to get you up at a certain point to handle the rest of this game.
That's true.
You know?
Right.
I just thought it was, like, kind of a neat, it was a neat mechanical way to handle that sort of thing. And also, it's like, experience has always been, represented as doling out of these points and stuff. And like, an immense amount of experience is just an immense amount of these points.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an in-world reason that something like this happens.
Well, and the idea that the greatest source isn't even overcoming, like, single enemies, it's overcoming something internal.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, even the New Age hippies was so, like, an enemy you fight in Onet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of New Age hippieism that is built into this game.
Like,
search inside yourself, defeat your own nightmares, find your courage and bring it with you.
Yeah. I remember I actually defeated Ness's nightmare. It was like a war of attrition, basically. Like, he would attack, I would heal up a little bit, I would attack, he would continue healing and attacking, and eventually I just drained him of his magic attacks.
Oh, he ran out of side points?
Exactly. And, like, so it was just this, like, grueling battle where we were just, like, trading blows back and forth. Like, there was no elegance to it. It was just, like, beating on each
other. That is what overcoming your nightmares is like, Scott.
It's just wild. Like, in this, like, 1995 JRPG where it's, like, these very rote mechanics, when paired with the themes of the game, it's like, oh yeah, this is just a grind against whatever lives inside of you. Like,
works.
There's no elegant way of handling this. You just need to face it until one of you gets exhausted.
And there are times where I think things like that are an accident, but then you have the rest of the game just actually, and maybe this guy's just just kind of really a genius or something.
Like or a madman, or just severely depressed. Like, maybe all of those things.
All of the above.
Yeah. So, again, you defeat the nightmare, you get a premonition to head back to our favorite weird place, Saturn Valley, and then we start gearing up for what becomes the end game pretty soon.
Yeah, the whole gang is there.
Yeah, the whole gang.
We're getting the band back together.
It's also funny that you are just collapsed during all this time, and your friends are, like, looking around you, like,
oh, man, what happened?
What happened?
Like, Ness is tripping balls right now. it's all those volcano fumes.
For me, I was, like, really tripping because I was in the clouds.
It was in that pink area. Oh, yeah, like, interesting. Yeah, because I must have been in, like, Rat Valley or something like that. Interesting. Yeah.
Ness wakes up in a sewer. All right, let's go on to the next part here. Back to Saturn Valley.
Dr. Andonuts is there.
Yeah, everyone's favorite bad dad.
He's a bad dad. I've got more things to say about Dr. Andonuts later.
Yeah, he comes back.
In a weird way. Like, I was kind of surprised because I didn't think he would actually show up to help. But he comes up with this... I guess him and Apple Kid work together?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they've been working together. Not like that good for nothing orange kid that everyone is obsessed with.
And he has a Mr. Saturn-shaped, multi-dimensional tool.
Yeah. Because Pokey has apparently captured a Mr. Saturn and is like, I don't know, trying... I mean, it becomes clear that Mr. Saturns are some sort of interdimensional beings.
Yes.
Because, like, there's a reason why Pokey grabs it to, like, try to get to Gygas and various... Yeah. You know, dimensions and time periods. Like, there's a reason why Dr. Andonuts, like, essentially harnesses the Saturn Valley power to make this weird spaceship. Yeah. Like, and the fun thing is, they never explain why, where, how they, where they come from.
That's just the interdimensional beings, man.
Like, theoretically, Earthbound is a form of Earth, you know? Like, it's, maybe not. Like, you know, is this like a Pokemon world?
And then Mr. Saturn, like, unites those two worlds?
Yeah, it's like, is Mr. Saturn, like, the kind of fulcrum in between those two?
I mean, according to the Smash Brothers lore, right, all of these worlds are part of one multiverse.
That's true. Right? And all of a sudden, Ryu
shows up. Hadouken's guy gets in the face.
Yeah, so you go back, Apple Kid, Dr. Andonuts is there, Pokey is causing a ruckus, and so you need to go chase after him, as you almost always do.
Yep.
And
you need a meteorite to put inside the machine for it to work. And that requires you to go all the way... This took me a while, by the way, because I completely forgot about the meteorite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you like ask the mouse or whatever? Like, how'd you figure out, or were you just walking around?
I kept walking around and thinking, like, where could it be? And Andonuts says something like, is there anywhere a meteorite was? Like, really heavy-handedly?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. I get maybe that first place. Yeah. And then you got to go to Onet, and there are super high-level enemies there.
Yeah. I think this is probably the hardest part of the game, actually.
Yeah.
Even though it was only, like, a few minutes, like, for something about how I was leveled versus how the enemies were leveled, like, it was incredibly difficult.
Once again, I fled from most of the battles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the Starmen, they'll just do the, Starstorm. Yeah.
Which will one-shot pretty much everybody but Ness at that point.
Yeah. At this point, I had leveled up sufficiently so that sometimes a full, what would be a mortal blow wouldn't actually be a mortal blow. It would just leave you at one HP.
Oh, if you killed them.
Even during the battle.
Oh,
like,
right.
I think Guts controls that, or maybe Vitality controls that, actually.
Oh, I always thought that was some weird thing when you kill them right before you drop to zero.
That certainly does happen, because, like, you also have those exploding enemies where if you can just get through before, you know, if you can get to the after battle sequence, it'll stop the timer from going down.
Right.
I remember just, like, starting the battle, and I would instantly cast Starstorm with Pooh, and then cast,
and,
like,
hope for the best.
Psy, you know, Ness is, like, Omega version, and just, like, hope that it cast before they could cast.
That was the rest of the game for me, that, basically. Like, desperation, like, Hail Marys. Right.
It's also, like, Ness is way more powerful than his friends at this point.
Yeah, he's a good... I mean, at this point, he was probably, like, 20 levels above all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has way more health. Paula never gets strong enough to take a hit.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because she also outputs some of the most damage.
Yeah.
And is like some of the one ice, of the more useful. Yeah. Freeze Omega is huge.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought this was a really challenging part of the game, but it's also like you have to make this weird pilgrimage back to your home where like things have just gotten way, way worse. Like there's all these things around. There's kind of like the Scouring of the Shire type moment where you're like, oh man, like, oh, that's messed up. Why did I leave
here?
Yeah.
Like, well, at least your mom is not never leaving the house. Maybe that's why your dad doesn't come home. He's like, things are fucked up.
There's a lot of weird aliens. Like, yeah. So your mom, Ness's mom is basically like, you know, barricaded in, and King is in there as well as the dog. Yeah. But yeah, so you have to go back and grab some of that meteorite chunk. Yeah. Definitely a tough battle. Or a tough series of battles.
Yep.
And, like, I remember just thinking, like, you engage one enemy and you're just praying that the other enemy that's on the far side of the screen doesn't reach you.
Yeah. like, every time it's just one enemy, you're like, sweet. Yeah. Score.
It's so rare that you'll get lucky, but every once in a while you feel like you just, like, hit the jackpot.
Yep.
Yeah. So you grab the meteorite and head back to Saturn Valley, and you have this, like, pretty ominous, like, hey, you should probably take care of what you're taking care of. Like, even Dr. Antonet says something like that.
It's a classic JRPG moment of, like, if you go on from here, there's no coming back.
So, like, you know, put a save in right there. Yeah. Like,
I wish I had heeded that warning a little bit better. Because what I failed to do was buy, like, Psy Caramels.
Oh, yeah.
And that really hurt me in the end game.
Yeah.
Like, when I did not, I had, like, one Horn of Life when I went into this last sequence.
Did you have the heal... I don't know if it's Heal Omega or Heal Theta or something like that. I forget which one.
Does it revive?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me right now? Are you serious? I didn't know that did that.
I think it's the third level of heal revives a character.
You're gotta be joking. Oh my god.
Man.
I mean, I had that ability. I had no idea it revived characters.
Knowing that, now I weep for your experience in this cave.
Like, it actually, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, well, whatever. We'll continue. Yeah. I cannot fucking believe, though. I did not know that.
Yeah. Okay, so you go in there. You go to the place where people on the internet have said that they sample All You Need Is Love from the Beatles as the music.
Oh, really?
And it's that weird kind of like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and then they just keep looping it over and over again.
It's weird music.
Yeah.
This is also, by the way, the location that you can see from an in-game world much earlier in the game.
Yeah.
Which is pretty weird.
And I think it was off of the sanctuary location. Like, you could kind of peer into, like, this area or something like that. I think it was that. I'm not 100% sure, though. So you go in here and, you just start exploring. You're looking for Gygas, basically. Right. And, of course, as you do that, Pooh's sensei or whatever, like, flies in, is like, oh, also now you have Starshot Omega or whatever.
Here's the last one,
which is great.
I mean, that's how Pooh works, though. I mean, even at the very end, that's how Pooh works.
You never know. That's how Pooh works. Unexpectedly
Pooh is there.
Yeah,
there's some weird, like, time travel stuff too. Like, they reference you going back in time, but like, they accidentally send you back in time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the whole sense, though, right, is that the evil that is Gygas transcends space and time.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you're looking for Pokey, who is, like, trying to find a point in time to basically launch an attack at a point where you can't stop him.
What the fuck,
classic, man. Time travel. Like, oh, also, Pokey is just a real Pokey jerk.
Is the worst.
And, like, you know, kidnapping a Saturn so he can make it to this point and get there. And so you figure out that Pokey has found a way to even go further back in time to try to get to a point where you're not even born yet. Gygas kind of mount his attack before you can even be born to stop him. Dr. Andonitz warps back in somehow with another, like, I think also he
Clutch
was...
Andonitz save.
Well, and he was saying, like, I had the sense that this was Dr. Andonitz from another point in time. Like, from,
oh,
like,
really?
Because, like, he said something weird about, like, time travel. And, like, because how did he warp through with his Mr. Saturn machine if you had already done it?
So this must have been before you took the Saturn machine?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. So he would have warned you then. He was like, I'm going to hook you up later.
Yeah.
Don't fret.
Well, maybe this is just a space one and he has another one or something.
I thought he made another one.
He must have, because like...
I mean, he's fucking Andonuts. He could have made one and kept it hidden because he's a jerk.
Because he hates Jeff. He's like, oh, here's the better one. It has a nicer seat, but fuck you. Here's Jeff. You
know? Exactly. Jeff, take this one. It smells like fucking cigarettes.
Yeah. Regardless, this is when you truly go back in time, because he's saying, okay, you know, you can go through space with this one. I've made another one that you can go back through time, but one little hitch, you'll probably die if you do this.
Yeah. Well, this is the part where he warns you that you're going to be a robot, right?
Yeah.
Like, he says you have to take your souls out.
Yeah.
And put them inside of machines.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to get back to your body afterwards. Yeah. It's worse than dying. Yeah. There's like a little bit of like, you will be doomed to purgatory forever.
Yeah.
There's a good deal of like, man, Ness, you're the best. You're willing to take this risk for the universe. Mm-hmm. You and your friends are willing to take that risk.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, like, they don't sugarcoat it like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you know, you've come this far and it's a really big thing to ask. And there's a big possibility that you won't come back.
Yep.
But we certainly do need to stop Gygas.
Well, he asks you, like, are you willing to do that? And you can say no.
Yeah.
And if you say no, he's like, yeah, that's totally understandable. Yeah. I guess there's nothing to do but wait for Gygas' attack.
Yeah.
Which is really great. Like, I like that there's
I can't blame you for this.
Yeah, like, man, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. I liked this part because this is where you start to see the cracks in Andonuts' relationship with Jeff. Mm-hmm. Where he's like saying, okay, you know, Ness, like, give me your baseball hat or whatever, so you can kind of like have a token or whatever of your human self as he puts you in these robot bodies. But he like lingers on Jeff a little bit. Like, he even says something like, oh, you know, Jeff, my son, and then just kind of like trails off a little bit, like as he's like transferring his soul into like a robot.
That felt to me though like he was just saying, oh, Jeff, I don't have anything to say to you. You're my son, I guess. Good luck.
Now you're a robot.
Now you're a robot.
I somehow like you more now.
I've always wanted a robot, son.
Yeah, this was like, I imagine...
God, I cannot believe fucking Heal revives people. That seriously blows my mind.
I was going to ask, like, what your thought process was like at this point. Like, so I was like, man, when I was playing this, I was like, man, George is in for like a real treat now, because like
I thought I had fucked up somewhere. I was like, man, I messed up. So the very first time I did a sequence, I just ran from everybody.
Oh yeah.
And I ended up getting to Gygas.
Oh yeah.
With just Ness.
Oh, okay.
And then like I, you know, engaged in a fight, and of course I clearly lost terribly. But it was kind of mind blowing. I felt like I had just not grinded enough.
Yeah.
And so what I ended up doing was just bunkering down while I watched like League of Legends or something and played
just
and grinded for like 3 hours. Yeah.
Well, and like you get to the point where your Mr. Saturn mobile can just restore you. So you just like go a little bit into the cave.
That's
as a
exactly
robot.
Exactly what
go
I
go back,
did.
Heal yourself. Like
there came a point where I finally fought someone. It was only like a one person, but they instantly died. You know, you don't have to fight them.
Oh yeah.
And I had collected some psi caramels from fighting people and I was like rejoicing.
Yeah. You got to the point where you actually had an instant kill for the Oh, that's cool.
But only for the one person. Whenever they were in groups of two, it was an instant kill. But you know, after a lot of the grind, and this is actually not that big a chunk of time, there's only maybe like three sections before you encounter the Gygas guy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're fighting all of the Starmen, which are just so very hard.
Yeah.
You really sort of have to be strategic. But what was cool is by the time that I felt comfortable and I was ready to go, I fought my way about halfway through. Everybody was pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I had some side caramels and I was like, all right, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. And so the rest, the other half, I suddenly had to play very, very seriously. Like, okay, I have to defend right now and then do this and this and this. And it was really strategic. And I got to Gygas maybe halfway through and I felt good because that last bit of challenge was something that was, like, I didn't just grind to the point where they were useless. I grinded to the point where I felt strong enough to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it with, like, intent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, I mean... All of these last enemies really, they force a concentration about like basically order of operations,
right?
Because like there's no real timer like a Final Fantasy game. It's more about like you just remembering who attacks first and in what order. So it's like, okay, I'm not even going to bother healing this person because that hit is going to take them down and it's going to be a waste of side points. Yeah. You know, so it's like, I'm just going to instead preemptively heal the other person that's going to take.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah.
Or like for a while, Paula was actually going faster than the enemies. So she would drop her shield, her group shield on everybody, which would block the Ghost Starman's Starfall attack.
Yeah, yeah. Is the Starstorm a physical or a psychic
attack? It must be a psychic attack, because the psychic shield is what blocked that attack.
Because I never got fast enough to do that, so it was always, like, me playing defense after that.
It was, like, 50-50, whether or not she would go first.
Yeah. So you fight your way through this cave as a robot, which also I really like the fact that you have these mechanical noises when you're walking as robots.
Yep.
And the only robot with distinguishing characteristics is Ness, because he's having a hat. Yeah.
They really embraced the robot, even the way that your arms move.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Robots with souls. Yes. The ghost in the machine is Ness, basically.
Yeah.
And so you make it to this point that looks like a combination of like a brain and small intestines, basically, like just coiled around. Like things get weirdly organic, and there's a strange metaphor where like there's these weird robots inside of this strangely organic thing with souls inside of them.
Yeah, you know? Like, oh, weird. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's a strange, like, there's multi layers of what is a machine.
And how would you be the ghost of a Starman? I guess. Right?
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of kind of quasi spirituality going on. At the end of it, you run into what I guess is Gygus, or is like the kind of
the singular
metaphorical representation. Yeah.
I mean, this is the Cthulhu, like gothic horror, like terrifying, unknown, faceless beast point in the game.
Except he does have a face.
It's your face.
It's Ness's face.
Yeah.
So what bizarre. The hell?
I mean, again, man, like all of this is just this weird hallucination.
Like this weird Darth Vader moment where you fight this, like, you know, the worst enemy in the entire world, and it's Ness's face on it.
For like a brief second, I thought Andronauts had become a traitor and had like taken my body
and put it in there.
And like was like he fed Gygus, and this was some weird thing. Yeah.
But actually, it's even darker. It's kind of like your own like doubt and anger and stuff feeding
it's
Gygus.
Like exactly. Like, it's like the evil and fear inside of you.
Yeah. With his acolyte, Pokey.
Fucking Pokey. The worst.
So without any warning,
Pokey's come a long way, though, to be fair. Like, he's a little kid and he's now like a second to demigod.
Sure, he's now the Vader to the Palpatine. He's come a long way, baby. So without any real warning, like, hopefully you were healed up by the time that you like entered this, because it's like,
I mean, I fought Gygus probably like 6 times, and the only real time I ever had a chance was that last one.
So Pokey and Gygus engage you. Pokey is in this like Wild Wild West style spider mech.
The famous Will Smith film, Wild Wild West.
This is a tough battle, too.
I was kind of secretly hoping Gygus would turn on Pokey, and Pokey's like, would be devoured. You know, something really disgusting.
This is a difficult battle because it's not immediately apparent what's happening.
Yeah.
Pokey takes your attack power way down.
Yep.
Gygus reflects attacks on you.
Well, and uses your own abilities. Like, Psy Gaming, which was the word that I had chose, which was like a weird meta thing, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like,
now Gygus is gaming. The gaming is hurting my game.
And if you try gaming on him, the gaming just reflects back.
Yeah, the gaming goes right back.
And like, exactly right. At one point, I had a shield and it would deflect damage, but then it would deflect back to Gygus, and then that would hit me.
You have
again
to have like the lower level shield, which is what I figured out pretty quickly. Yeah.
So like, there's just all these like intricate, you know, mechanical influences on all this battle that you have to figure out what's going on. Whereas, and the whole time, Pokey is just trolling with like decreasing your attack power over and over again.
That first battle, you just have to kill Pokey.
Yeah, exactly. And so once you do, you thought the game was weird at this point. The game gets real weird at this point.
Gygus gets a face again, I think it's a face. It looks like a face.
Yeah, I mean, it's a distorted, blurry...
It kind of looks like... have you ever played Amnesia, The Dark Descent?
Yeah.
It looks like the face of those fucked up monsters that are chasing you through hell.
It's this demonic kind of specter, almost. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like... you see a face there because your fear is projecting that face into it.
Yes.
You know, if you just showed this to a computer screen or something, it wouldn't recognize a human face, but you're kind of like superimposing this like evil onto it.
Well, and again, like this unknown horror, right? Every time he attacks, it says like you don't even comprehend Gygus's true attack.
And it's just like a weird like pink thing or whatever, a flash that hits you. Yeah, like,
but like a dark circle that expands out.
Of nothingness, and you're like, I don't even know what attack this is. Like, and also, when you attack Gygus, it's not even clear what you're attacking. The screen just kind of flashes. You do some damage. It's not clear if it's like being effective or not. Like, it's you're not. You don't know if this is a physical thing, if it's like a ghostly thing. Yeah. Like, this is just this is an essence that you're fighting.
I mean, and at this point, before Pokey leaves, he tells you.
Yeah.
Gygus has become, he's not just representative of evil, he's become this weird, like, manifestation of all that is evil.
Yeah.
Pretty dark.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark.
And also, this is, like, I really respect just from, like, a development and a technology side of things, where they knew they were on a Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you represent something like that? Let's just make some weird fucked up Mode 7 style graphics and, like, you know, kind of make an impressionistic thing. Yeah, it's like, I mean, you could kind of go the Final Fantasy route of doing just a super detailed sprite and, like, a, you know, stylized version of an enemy. But this is just like, let's just see what these weird cartridges can do and make, like, what is essentially glitch art, you know?
Yeah, and it goes to an extreme when he enters his third form.
When you haven't seen his final form.
His final form, which is really just another, like, extreme manifestation of that. Like, it starts to layer itself on it. It starts to stretch. It starts to become really staticky.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I had played this game as a kid because it would have messed with me because the static is, you're used to that on like old CRTs.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, now on the Wii U tablet, you know, I know it doesn't have to look like that, but it's kind of weirdly creepy if you now start seeing Gygus as manifesting electronically.
Yeah. I was thinking about that same thing too, because, you know, the first time I played this, it was on a CRT TV and this came out in an era when that was the de facto technology. And it also, the aesthetic of the game is very much an analog aesthetic.
Right.
And so there's this kind of confluence of things where Gygus is, you know, he is an essence of, like, you know, emotion and feeling and too, but it's also like he is there to kind of disrupt whatever the technology is that you're also playing the game on.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's like it's it doesn't have the same oomph when you're playing it on an HD TV like I was this time around.
Yeah. It borders on what, almost like what Metal Gear Solid did when it's sort of meta and Psycho Mantis knows how you're playing.
Yep.
I could see this being really cool if I felt like for a moment, or I could entertain the idea that Gygus is affecting my television.
Yeah. Well, and it also kind of, there's a meta layer to it where if you read interviews with eToy, like he was saying, like some of the inspiration for Earthbound was when he saw like a scary or disturbing movie when he was a child.
Oh, interesting.
And it like really infected, and it was like one of those things where like, sure, this is not super traumatic, but like he saw this thing where there was like a graphic violent scene or a rape scene or something like that, and like that kind of darkness really freaked him out as a kid.
Wow.
And so you kind of see these like weird, like, you know,
don't take your kids to adult movies, everybody.
Yeah, like, what does a scary thing look like to a kid? You know, it's this weird staticky thing that you probably weren't supposed to be looking at.
Yeah, and, like, how do you explain it, right?
Yeah.
Like, if a kid doesn't, if there's a sense as a kid when you see something that you know you're not supposed to see, that it's bad, but you don't know why it's bad.
Yeah.
You can't vocalize
exactly
why that it's bad.
You just know that this is probably the worst thing that can possibly be.
Yeah.
Also, Gygus is, like, kind of groaning, like, things at you.
Yeah, he says things.
Sometimes he's calling out to Ness too.
Yeah, and like sometimes he just says Ness.
Yeah,
where it hurts. Like there's this weird element where there's a, like, should I be feeling bad for Gygus?
I know. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like and sometimes he's like saying, "Oh, I'm so happy" or whatever, and then like he goes back to just like, you know, screaming out at Ness and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just this like,
he says it hurts.
Yeah, like it's a very like, it's almost, you almost do feel sorrowful for him, but in a way that's scary. Like, he's so, he is like Gygax is just pure misery, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there were times where I thought maybe that wasn't Gygax speaking at all.
Yeah.
For a while, I was like, maybe this is Ness speaking.
Right, he's trapped in it or something that.
Yeah, like something bizarre like that.
And maybe he is in a weird metaphorical way, right? Like, you know, Gygax is kind of the metaphor for what Ness and what everyone else is feeling inside of them, you know? Like,
yeah, so. I mean, to encapsulate that fear, right, it's also scary to think that you're hurting something that doesn't want to be hurt.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That, something that wants to exist, but its existence is inherently hurtful to others.
Have you seen that movie Event Horizon? Like, that's what this is like, man. Like, there's an extremity here that's really, really dark.
Yeah, well, and it's also clear that you're not anywhere anymore. Like, this is just a psychic fight, you know, you're a spirit fighting another spirit,
right,
in the body of a robot
in the space between worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and also fucking Pokey is being a douchebag at the same
time. Pokey, like, is the worst.
So let's talk about how to actually defeat Gygax.
Yeah, so I discovered this by accident.
Good, that's probably the best way to discover
it is the best way.
Yeah.
But this was, like, I felt really good. Like, all my guys are pretty healthy.
Yeah.
And you get to the final stage, and nothing is very effective. Mm. And he kept using Psy Flash.
Mm.
So all of my team was just spending their whole time
crying.
Like, weeping or being paralyzed. Yeah. And I'm like, all I'm doing is healing.
Yeah.
And so I just have Paula pray.
Yeah, it's like, maybe something will happen.
Yeah. Well, I never quite understood what prayer did anyway, right? Like,
God, what a fucking great game. Because I never really understood what prayer did until my moment of need.
I mean, I didn't, right? Like, throughout the game, you never quite, like, pray sometimes heals, but I didn't want heal, right? Like, I cast prayer in hopes that it would cleanse everybody at once, because all I had was using a lot of psi power. Yeah. From Ness to heal individually, and I knew, like, this is not tenable. This isn't going to work. Okay, maybe a prayer will heal everybody. Yeah. I don't fucking know how this thing works. And I guess, to some extent, there's a hint at this, right? Because I think Pokey says, like, now you're truly alone, and I know that you're psychic, so go ahead and try to reach out to
people. Yeah, he's like, you try to reach out, no one will answer you or whatever,
Paula prays, and there's, like, it zooms in.
Yeah.
It leaves the battle completely into a whole nother world, and then people hear your prayer and start to pray with you.
Yeah. Also, just a little touch, when it zooms in and out, it's like when you turn off and on a CRT monitor. Like, everything goes to the center of the screen and terminates at a point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is weird. there's like a bunch of different feelings I have about this, right? Yeah. On the one hand, I love this. I think it's so freaking cool.
Yeah.
I think that it's awesome that Paula is essentially the person that saves the day in the game. You could not beat the game without Paula, I presume.
Oh, yeah, and also the mechanical significance of, you did something out of desperation. Like, you were praying that something would happen.
You were desperate, right? Yeah. Like that level, you know, normally at the end of the game, and at the end of an JRPG, it's a moment where you have all of this power. And at the end of this one, it's actually, you just have a lot of doubt.
Yeah.
You don't know how to fight Gygax.
Yeah.
You don't know what Gygax is. You can't see his abilities. Yeah. You're doing these things out of desperation. You use prayer, and connecting this to Sense8, right?
Yeah.
As we were talking about, about that show before this episode.
Yeah.
But this is one of the few games where I feel like it actually has a sort of, like, globalized message, right? It isn't just you being super powerful.
Right.
The whole world is there with you, and everyone is praying with you.
Mm.
At the same time, I also find it really strange that the power of prayer is the one that defeats it. Like, the game doesn't ever feel to me like it's not necessarily spiritual or biblical.
Yeah.
There's no, like, God that comes down and defeats Gygax.
Yeah.
But this is a moment where I felt like it's not Ness's power now, it's prayer, like, collective prayer.
Yeah.
Is Itori Christian? Like, is there, like, do you think that there's a Christian message here? Is there a translation thing?
I mean, I definitely know that, like, from the very little amount of Japanese studies I've done, and also from the many Japanese video games I've played, I do know that things like prayer and, like, the Bible and, like, in Japan, that is looked at more like Zeus,
like,
and
mythology.
Odin. Yeah,
sure.
So it's like,
well, that's how I see Zeus and Odin, really. I have my Thor manual at home.
They're not a historically Christian society, so those things are looked at as kind of generic religious icons rather than kind of sociocultural things.
Yeah, and so, like, my really positive outlook on this is exactly that, right? In which prayer is basically a stand-in for, like, collective power.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, generic prayer, not Christian prayer.
Yeah,
whereas exactly. We grew up in a Christian society, so, like, exactly. To us, it's, like, that has way more cultural connotations right. than, like, yeah.
Exactly right. So, yeah. Like, growing up in a Christian society, yeah. the moment I realized, like, the power of prayer is being this game,
yeah.
it makes me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at it from that other perspective, right,
yeah.
which is basically saying, the way that we overcome fear and evil in society, the thing that is literally creating a scenario where adults are mean towards children,
yeah.
like the way that we confront that is by collectively realizing we have to confront it
yeah.
and working together and being conscious of it.
Yeah.
What the fuck? That is yeah. a crazy message. Like, that is a crazy yep. awesome message
yep.
that is being spread in, like, this tiny little video game from 95 yeah. that I would never... Like, those types of
yeah.
on-the-nose, like, powerful messages are very rare
yeah.
In games, and it's really cool to see.
And just from, like, a structural perspective where you... It's not only... You can't just pray one time. You have to keep going. Like,
yeah.
every turn, you have to make sure Paula keeps praying, and every time the prayer... does more damage to Gygus.
Oh, man. Yeah. And then let's go fucking next level, yeah. right? Second to last prayer, it's engulfed by the darkness.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, your prayer reaches no one.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, what the fuck does yeah. this mean? Like, I don't know what's happening right now. Yeah. Does this mean that, like, I started thinking again about Christian prayer.
Yeah.
Like, is this saying that there isn't an entity? Like, is this maybe an atheist message? And it's saying there is no entity there, but in fact, it's the collective group that has to do it.
Yeah.
And then the final prayer... goes to fucking Ness, like
yeah.
which. So at this point, is that like saying you, the player, like it's your prayer?
So what happened is you name your save file,
right?
And then the prayer goes to you, the person you named as the save file.
So if I had named the save file George,
I named the save file Scott, and
oh,
so
my God,
and so it was like you. It, you know, Paula prays, and at first it just blanks out most of the letters.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like blank C blank blank blank.
Oh my God!
Listens to the prayer, and then you pray a few more times, and it's like, you know, Scott hears the prayer and like joins with them or something.
Holy
like that.
Holy shit,
it's
dude! Like, what? I wish I had renamed my save file to my name.
Yeah.
Or I wish it again. Like, I vehemently believe this is a game for kids in all the right way.
Yeah.
Because if I were a kid, and this it was like. It's you doing it now. Like, not only were you the player who like leveled up and you've come a long way and you've done all these great things as the game's reminding you, but it's the power to change your outlook on life is in your hands too.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah. And you keep praying and now the player becomes this weird kind of deity that is outside the game,
yep.
but is also separated from the characters. Like the characters in this game are constantly set off as actual characters and not as ciphers for the player.
Yes.
And like the last part of this message is exactly that, because it's like, oh, Scott is praying for Ness right now. I'm not even playing anymore. I'm just hoping that Ness can make it.
Yeah.
Like I'm praying that he will get right. through this, you know, like.
And it's as though the game is banking on that you care enough about these characters
yeah.
that you've bought into what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And so if it's successful and you're believing like, man, the last prayer got consumed by the darkness,
yeah.
like by nothing. There's no hope.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. I really hope Ness is okay.
Yeah.
So like, to almost like predict that you're going to have that feeling
yeah.
and then build it into the game message
yeah.
is pretty marvelous.
It's just, yeah, it's a pretty incredible and also very simple mechanical thing,
yep.
but it connects you to that in a way that like very, very few games ever do,
yeah.
like in a strange like meta way.
I think this is probably one of my favorite boss battles in a video game.
Like, yeah.
It's just so cool. So you defeat Gygus. But one quick note before you defeat Gygus, because I think this connects to also like what happens afterwards, mm-hmm. right? Your dad never prays with you.
Yeah.
That was a huge bummer to me. Like,
yeah.
That really made me sad
yeah.
for Ness.
Yeah.
And when you come out of it, right, like you're all together mm-hmm. and there's, you know, people start saying goodbye and it's mm-hmm. really touching. And again, you're like, your dad's not there. And even Jeff goes with Dr. Andronauts and mm-hmm. is like, oh, my dad. And you get the sense, oh, maybe Jeff and his dad are going to sort of be together and you know, get a better relationship
yeah.
by working on it together after this big adventure. The fact that Ness never has that with his dad was super surprising to me.
Yeah.
And I liked it a lot because to me it felt like there isn't, you know, even though at the game, ostensibly at the end of the game, ostensibly you, it says, okay, you have to go home now. Mm-hmm. Right. You can't ever really go home again in the way that you can when you have it flashback to where your parents were in that house.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you go home.
You're not going back in time. You're just going back home.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and that's a really important message for a coming of age story. Yeah. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you're a different person than you were than you were when this whole experience first started.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily change the way things are around the world for the better. Like, not everybody is happy, and your dad's not suddenly going to be workaholic anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and saying goodbye to all of the, like, the party members.
Yeah.
I mean, Pooh just kind of, like, disappears. You know,
he learns one more ability called the farewell.
Yes, BSI farewell.
Which, by the way, is just teleport.
It's like, it just teleport in a very, very small circle. You get some insight into, what's Jeff's friend's name? Tony. Yep. Tony is, like, still waiting and hoping that, and, like, lonely, like, for Jeff to come back.
When he writes a letter, too. Yeah. It's like, don't just give this to anybody.
Yeah. And then Jeff is looking to kind of maybe start a long road to kind of getting to know his dad again.
Yep.
And he even says something weird to, like, Paula and Ness, saying, like, oh, if you get married, can I be the guy who, like, fixes your electronics or something like that? I was like, weird. Like, so he wants to, like, be their kind of handyman neighbor or something like that if they eventually get married, I guess.
I mean, I like that one of his goals in life is to just be their friend. Like, that's a really sort of mundane thing. I mean, even Paula says, okay, I'm glad we had this adventure, but I have to go back to being a little girl again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And Paula and Ness spend the most time together. Like, you're supposed to, you know, you take her back to the preschool where she and her family works and takes care of kids.
You could take her home to your home.
Yeah.
I went to my home first, and the mom's like, oh, this is your girlfriend.
Yeah. And it's like awkward. You can do that, like, with a bunch of,
we're not formal. We don't want to put a word on it. We're not Facebook official yet.
I didn't do a lot of the other things, like, you know, you can walk around and talk with the other people in the towns that you've met. You know, you can, like, revisit a bunch of people. I think it's cool to see at least some of the world that is now at peace. You know, like, you're seeing what you were doing this war, like, why you were fighting this war.
I mean, look at the end of, like, Final Fantasy VII, right? Yeah. The game is ending and you don't get to explore a world that is at peace.
It just ends. Yeah. It was funny talking with Paula's dad, who was like, oh, I guess it's okay that you guys are dating now or something.
Yeah, I think it's like, oh, you can sleep on the good couch.
Right? Yeah. But it's just funny because I think that was an interesting thing. And all the adults put Paula and Ness's relationship in the, oh, yeah, they're girlfriend and boyfriend now. Like, they never said that or decided that explicitly in the game.
Right.
This is just the paradigm that all adults think that these two kids relate to each other, and that's it. Like, they don't even really ask them their opinion on it. They just assume it's that way.
Yeah. You Although, alternatively, on a more positive note, it could be that they're like, oh, you clearly show maturity now to handle a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's fine. I just think that Paula and Ness's relationship is way more subtle than what people label it as.
Totally.
You know, when you go talk to them. It's something that and also that's another kid thing. Like, you know, adults make fun of kids all the time for hanging out with, like, you got a crush on her. Yeah. It's just like another one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, this is a kid's story, you know, like you've been saying a lot. So you finally make it back to your house, and then credits roll.
Yeah. The camera guy.
Yeah.
gives your mom a photo album of all of the pictures you've taken.
See, I told you that fuzzy pixels would pay off.
It was so worth it. Well, one, like, I remember I was talking shit about Ness's mom for a while, and Ratish on Twitter got back to us saying, oh, he actually saw it as her giving Ness a lot of independence.
Yeah.
I've totally come around to the way that he saw things, because the way that she responds at the end of the game is like, oh, take a break.
Mm-hmm.
This is a safe space.
Yeah.
Tell me everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, that is so affirming. Like, that desire to want to share, like, as a kid too, right? Like, you see it happen all the time. Kids are like, oh, look at me, look at me. And there's a level of, like, childhood narcissism in there as well. But there's also a genuine desire to sort of share your experience, to convey to someone who is older than you and mature that, like, what you went through or experienced is something that's really valuable and you want to share that with them. And to have her be welcoming with that made me feel really good. I was like, I'm so glad that the mom is, like, actually on your side, even if the dad still is not home yet.
Yeah. And I think that last thing, because they do, like, they do a credits crawl with all of the sprites in the game, basically.
And it's funny, too, because it works. You know, all of the characters, it's like, oh, right, I remember that guy. Guys. Yeah. Like... or the pictures. At one point, there was a picture of Ness giving the peace sign, and Jeff and Paula were dead ghosts. Oh, and I was like, I remember that. Yeah, it's hilarious.
I fucking hated that desert.
Yeah, that was awful. Or, like, he's right by his bicycle. I'm like, man, I haven't ridden that thing in forever.
Yeah. Well, and, like, you can ride it again now that you don't have a bunch of party people, hanging around. But even in the credits scroll, the dad is represented by a telephone.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of like ringing. Yeah. Well,
so the icing on the cake, and I don't think that this is scripted. I think this is purely accidental.
Mm-hmm.
But so after the end of the credits roll, Ness wakes up in his bedroom at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, my dad calls me. In my home.
Oh,
and my dad
calls
me because I've been staying up too late.
Yeah.
And the only, like, I'm sleeping. My adventure's done. The only reason I woke up is because there was the knocking on the door or whatever. And the dad interrupts me. And I thought, like, oh, I'm waking up because I'm getting a phone call.
Mm.
Oh, no, it's just my dad, who is, again, oblivious. Completely oblivious of everything that Ness has been going through. It was, like, it was just this great icing on the cake of, like, man, like, this was a great game. But sometimes you just have to realize, like, your parents aren't a great parent.
Yeah. Or it's, like, this... God, just the dad figure is just such the... It's, like, the most, for me, like... I'm the most conflicted on that character because, like, it just says so much. You know, he's the one that makes sure that you can, like, buy new stuff and equip things that help you survive. And, like, what is the price of that? Is that he never gets to see the person that he's helping.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's also those moments when, like, at one point when I was fighting Gygas and you can't go to a shop anymore.
Yeah.
You can call your dad to save, and he tells you how much money he put in your bank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just another one of those moments. Like, yeah, you provided for me. But right now, last thing he needs. I can't shop. Like, all I need, like, is some fucking moral guidance as I'm a fucking robot ghost kid fighting a manifestation of pure evil, you know? And the dad cannot provide that in the way that he's built, right? Like, he can only provide what the telephone can provide.
Yeah. Man. So, yeah, you wake up to some frantic knocking, just like you did 30 hours ago. It's
Pokey's brother.
Yeah, Picky comes to the door. And delivers you a letter from Pokey.
Even Picky's an asshole, man. He wakes you up in the middle of the night. This can't wait.
Well, Picky is... I always feel bad for Picky. He's, like, the nice one out of that whole family.
I guess so.
And Pokey has just sent you a letter saying, like...
Taunting you.
Yeah, taunting you, saying that he's got away. And then the end with a question mark.
Right. Pokey, I probably want to murder more than any other video game villain ever.
We should talk about this. Because, like, in terms of video game villains, like, there's a certain... there's a certain, like, hatred of Pokey that you feel, and I feel like a lot of it is because he is, it's almost like he doesn't have a reason why he is like that, other than just, like, pure avarice,
I mean,
you know? Like,
yeah, he is a kid's bully, right?
Yeah.
Like, and especially now as a grown-up, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm old enough to realize, like, how fucking brutal some of those kids are, like...
Yeah.
It's just, you want to find some justice in it. Like,
yeah.
Even when you beat him, he's like, oh, it looks like I'm running away, but really I'm going to another era to plot some other, like, he's so arrogant that he can't even admit that he lost.
Yeah.
That is just brutal. Like, that, you get no satisfaction to overcome Pokey, and you won't. You just have to sort of accept the fact that he's a loser, and that's the way it has to be.
Well, and it's also, like, what does that mean, though? Like, does that mean that, you know, you can, like, try to defeat Gygas or whatever, but obviously Pokey is an example that there will always be jerks in the world, and there will always be greed and fear. And, like, so, I mean, what did you actually do by defeating Gygas? You know, like, Pokey's still out there, which means that whatever is inside of him was not destroyed by destroying Gygas. There's something innate to him.
Yeah, but what you've stopped is the sort of mass corruption, like the spread of that, right? Like, it's impossible to stop fear, but it is possible to breed a society that doesn't consistently live in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. to question it at least, rather than, because like there's gonna be something that's innate.
Yeah, like Poki's a dick, but as long as we all agree he's a dick, then that's okay.
As long as he becomes our social pariah for the entire.
We always have to hate somebody, you know. You live long enough to become the villain.
Poki lived long enough. 3 minutes into the game, he became the villain. Yeah. So that's the end of Earthbound.
Crazy, man. I can see why a lot of people really love this game.
Yeah,
it's definitely probably the weirdest game I've ever played.
Yeah, it's amazing that a game like that kind of gets made. I guess it was in a time where the RPG was strong enough,
right?
You know,
and it feels like, you know, when I talk about why like Eco is important to me, right? Of like, oh, this game that showed me what wonder could look like and feel like in a game.
Yeah.
When I hadn't, that was not something that I was accustomed to, yeah. Right? I think that this is one of those games that you play it and you can realize, man, this is a game that's both about something. It's about a lot of things, right? It's about parenthood and friendship and bravery and courage.
Yeah,
like all these big chunky themes, while at the same time not being about that at all and being fun and crazy weird and silly and bizarre and like free-spirited.
Yeah.
That's a really difficult line to walk for any sort of creative medium.
Yeah.
And to play this as a kid and feel like, man, someone gets it. Yeah. That's just really cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, this is tantamount to being a kid and reading, like, you know, Where the Wild Things Are or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, some of the Maurice Sendak works or some of the things that are feel like they're for you and they get you and they get the kid experience and you feel like it's speaking to you,
yeah.
You know?
And it's just, you feel those things on an innate level when you play it as a kid, and then if you revisit it, like revisiting books that are meant to be accessible by kids, you see like what the tools are, like how they're doing that,
right?
And you can and then you can appreciate it on that level.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, why was that last, I knew that last boss was super dramatic when I was a kid, but I couldn't quite articulate why it was dramatic, and now I can. It's like, oh, it's because you're using these same button presses to do the thing, and and instead of you know, using an attack, you are using this kind of like social, you know, you're using this like shared experience to you know, to go through. And
or
like,
even why Poki gets away, right? Like as a kid, maybe I would have been frustrated
with
that fact, but I think now, I think there's something about that, right? Like, it's not like all the kids that were assholes in middle school or high school are like, you know, I haven't beaten them up in real life. They're still working in, you know,
they get away.
Realty or some shit.
Yeah,
right?
Like, exactly.
Not everybody has to face the justice that you think that they deserve. And part of growing up is confronting that. And as an adult, it's something that I've learned over the years. And it's something that I can really appreciate being represented in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty impressive game. And you know, like, I'm glad that we made it through the whole thing, because it's one of those like games that people just, this is why when it got onto the virtual console, people were like flipping their shit, right? Because it's like, oh man, it's finally Earthbound.
Well,
you know?
And I'm sure a lot of people haven't, like, how would they have played it before it was on virtual console?
Yeah. I mean, you would have had to go and, you know, buy an $80 cartridge, I'm sure, because like it's probably pretty rare to get these days.
I want one now too, by the way.
To frame it, put it on
the,
like,
I think that'd be cool, you know. What a conversation starter, right? Like, if someone asked me now, like, oh, you know, what's a really weird game, like, let me tell you about Earthbound.
It's cool. All right, any other last thoughts? I mean, there's a million things to talk about in Earthbound, but we can't go on forever and ever on it. I think it's like, it is one of those like kind of cult masterpieces.
I think that's safe to say.
There's
a book, I totally forget who it's by or what it's called, but there's an Earthbound book that this guy wrote. I lent it to you briefly. Do you remember? It's part of like a series of books about video games.
Okay.
And it's basically like a close reading, but the book is also, while it's about Earthbound, it's also about his own life and the way that he sort of has Earthbound interpret his life and his life interprets Earthbound. And to me, that's exactly why Earthbound is such an interesting and compelling game experience, is you're going to want to bring all of your real life experiences into it and vice versa and think about it as what this would be like as a kid and what it would be like as a grown up and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I would recommend you guys check that out if you get a chance.
Yeah. And it's rare to have those games where it is meant to, you're meant to bring some of that stuff in.
Right.
You know, it's not a power fantasy where it's like, I'm not meant to bring my own life experiences yeah. into Batman, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm meant to disappear, like, you know?
Man, I totally feel like I've sucker punched someone in the gut like this before.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a sense that, E-Toy is... has a huge presence in here.
Yeah.
As well. But that, I mean, you know...
There's a heavy auteur feeling of this game.
But that is not... Like, that doesn't necessarily conflict with bringing yourself into it either.
Right? Well, it's the same thing, like, we were talking about, you know, the Golden Compass stuff or, sure. you know, anything. Yeah. Maurice Sendak or even Dr. Seuss or something like that. Clearly, the author's voice is very strong, but it's meant to resonate with things that you know on the outside.
Absolutely.
Rather than just kind of giving you an escape.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're supposed to think about things that are still happening on the outside.
Yeah, and I feel like so much of it, he wants you to experience it, like, aesthetically or experientially, right?
Yeah.
Like, creating that sense of nostalgia for something that doesn't exist,
yeah.
right? Like, what we talked about it in earlier episodes, American nostalgia from a Japanese perspective.
Yeah.
That's something that's really unique that you get from playing this game and that you won't have to tap into. But you can still, it still resonates with you, especially if you're American, and some of it seems especially weird or bizarre.
Yeah, right? Agreed.
Yeah. What do you think we should play next as our big debrief?
I don't know. It's going to be hard. I mean, Earthbound's a big one.
Yeah.
Some people were saying we should play Mother 3.
Right.
Well,
didn't that just get announced that's coming to,
Maybe. I mean, I haven't been following it closely, but there have been people that have done very, very faithful fan translations.
That's right, yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting thing. But there are some other games out there that have a similar kind of... I like the idea of, like, the cult, masterpiece/classic,
yeah,
because there are some of those out there that I haven't played.
You know, there's one that I've been thinking about doing, like, a longer playthrough, that because I think something, you know, when I think back on some of our games that are our favorites, that I think could hold up to this type of long debrief, right? I think there's something special about taking your time with this game,
yeah,
and doing it in these really discrete chunks and,
yeah,
talking about those discrete chunks individually. You know, I love Shadow of the Colossus, but I don't think it would necessarily hold up to do a podcast about each and every single Colossus. Unless it was super...
I climbed on the back of this one, man.
Yeah.
It was, like, crazy.
I mean, you could go into the mechanical detail, yeah, but that's a slightly different thing.
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption, I think, could probably hold up to this type of experience.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's still only available on 360.
Yeah.
What else do you think can hold up to this? And of some course, people a lot have, of JRPGs.
Some people have said... like Beyond Good and Evil might be an interesting
one. I've never played
one.
Beyond Good and Evil.
There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff there. It's not the same level of
Chrono,
like,
Trigger.
We could totally do this with
easily,
Chrono Trigger easily, even though we've played it a million times and reference it every other episode. But, like, I think, this is why in 1995, I think, Chrono Trigger was either, like, 95 or 96 or something like that. But, like, imagine, like, this is just, like, a golden era of JRPGs.
It'd be amazing,
you know, like,
yeah,
and also just thematically, like, these were the games that were pushing the medium to make you consider, like, what type of message they're sending. Just like Chrono Trigger was, like, Earthbound's a similar thing. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
They were kind of the Bioshocks of the time where we were talking about, oh, what does the medium mean? What type of messages are they sending?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think something like that. I've heard people say, even things like the Oddworld games are kind of interesting to revisit.
Like Abe's Odyssey.
What's the one that's the first-person shooter? That's the one that people were saying there's some interesting stuff.
An Oddworld first-person shooter?
Yeah, it's...
I never played it.
I think it was on the original Xbox, maybe PS2 era or something. I forget exactly what it's called. But there's some turns in that are somewhat
interesting.
We should take a look through the back catalog. I think maybe that's a good place to leave it, though, because, like, if people have suggestions, people seem to like this type of thing. So, like, we are happy to keep doing it, especially with, like, the classics like this.
Absolutely.
So experiencepoints@gmail.com is the email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. If you liked these, do us a favor, leave us a review on iTunes and Stitcher. It helps us find our moms and daddies.
And just pray.
And pray for us.
Yeah.
Pray for us.
Make sure it doesn't get swallowed by the darkness.
I never thought I would ask the world to pray for me on a podcast. Doing it now.
All right, everyone. Thank you very, very much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
So long. Every time. There's a place to go to.